Hi, my name is Rutendo Nyamuda, and welcome back to another phenomenal, exciting episode of In My 20s. In My 20s? Coming up on today's show, we sit down with another incredible guest. So introducing themselves onto the In My 20s podcast, I'd like to welcome them into the In My 20s family. And here they are.
Hi, I am Simusi Sokotelo, known as the Kid Prodigy. I'm a brother, I'm an uncle, I'm a son, I'm a friend, I'm a confidant, and I'm an FB pro bodybuilder. I'm passionate about what I do, and yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
Now on every episode of the In My 20s podcast, our guests always come through with these incredible mind moments or gem moments, and this is just one of them.
Being a IFBB pro is what I do, is not who I am. You know what I mean? And a lot of people I've seen, you know, they embody their work and it becomes a personality trait. Strip me of my title and I know exactly who I am.
The In My 20s podcast is split up into three sections. In the first section, we get to hear a little bit more about our guest's career history. In the second section, we dive into today's topic. And finally, rounding up all three sections is a conversation on the all-consuming 20s journey. Let's get straight into it. And so, Sibosiso, I want to hear a little bit about your background, like your career history, your life history. Where are you from? And essentially, how did you get to where you are today?
I'm from a small township called Lamontville. I went to a very good high school, I suppose, in George Campbell. And then I went and studied UCT. Thereafter, I came back to Durban, started working a bit in retail, and bumped into a guy who was an IFBB pro at the time, well, still is, by the name of Andrew Hudson. And then he basically kind of nudged me in the right direction, 2013. 2014, found myself competing on stage, and I've never looked back since. I turned pro exactly 4 years after I got on stage. So I turned pro in 2018 and had my pro debut in 2019, and I've been pro since. So that's me. That's me.
So, you know, on these podcasts, we love to dig into the details. For us, it's all about the details. So I'm going to take a step back in terms of like UCT days, UCT time. What did you study? Because as far as I'm concerned, as far as I know there's like a sports science degree, but you can't study to be a bodybuilder. So what did you study at UCT? And yo, how did you, what was that moment? Okay, let's just focus on UCT. So what was the UCT experience? What did you study at UCT? And is it even linked to being a professional bodybuilder?
Maybe it could be, right? Because I actually studied construction management. So it could be linked because I'm constructing my body. See what I did there? That's what happens when you're 30 and you got lame jokes, right? So I studied construction management. It's a BSc. It's so unrelated to obviously what I do. I mean, the construction space and bodybuilding are so far apart. The irony, though, is that Arnold Schwarzenegger was actually also into construction. They actually had a construction company and obviously also found himself doing bodybuilding. So, yeah, that's me. 2011. The UCT experience was actually quite cool, if I'm being very honest. It was thrilling. It was different. It was the first time I was away from home for that long, maybe even that far away from home. Because, I mean, during my rugby career, I'd have like rugby tournaments here and there. I'd come to Joburg. You know, you do a random two-hour drive out of Durban. But being that far away from home was the first time it ever happened. That environment was very great. I enjoyed it. So I actually had a very good experience, you know. What a lot of people don't know, though, is that I actually didn't finish at UCT. So here I am, first year, doing my thing, staying under the radar. Second year, started playing rugby. I kind of got too into the rugby thing, maybe. And then I got excluded, right? So now I'm back in Durban without a degree that obviously I went to go and try and get to UCT. And that's when I actually stumbled on my passion, right? Because I went and did and worked at Akajo. And then I bumped into Andrew Hudson, told me about bodybuilding. I was like, okay, cool, let's try this thing out. And at the time, I was still trying to obviously finish my degree via correspondence. And yeah, I finished that. But I'd already been hooked on my passion. And
what was that like engagement with him? Like, did you know him prior? Did he just see you and he was like, hey, you look like a bodybuilder, you should be doing this?
I swear, I was mind blown. In fact, so I was on my lunch break, right? So Gateway has a Virgin Active that's inside the mall, right? And here I am minding my own business and I'm on my lunch break, going to have a workout. And I'm doing a bench press and I feel this big like aura or energy around me, right? And this guy was like literally waiting for me to finish my workout. And I turn around, I look at this guy and he's literally towering over me. He goes, bro, I'm Andrew, and you are? So I'm like, I'm Smoo. So in my head, I'm thinking he's probably seen me at the store. He wants to ask me something, you know, store related, you know. And he's like, bro, I really think you got great genetics to do bodybuilding. So I'm like, what is bodybuilding? I've never heard of the sport. So he goes, no, you should Google a guy called Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm like, bro, respect me. I watch movies. Like, I know exactly who that is. He's like, no. Google him when he did his bodybuilding, not when he was, you know, an actor. So I'm like, oh, okay. All right. So I Google this guy and then I see him on stage. He's wearing posing trunks and whatnot. And I'm like, there's no way I'm doing that sports, my guy. Like, absolutely no way. So fast forward 3 weeks later, I bump into a guy who was my senior in high school. He was already involved in the sports. He's like, dude, let me take you to my coach. So I spoke to his coach and I swear, 3.5 months later, I found myself competing.
I know there are a number of us, speak for myself, but I know there are a number of us who like are dying to obviously, you know, look good, have good bodies and be healthy. We go to the gym a lot of times. We have meat-free Mondays and, you know, cut out sugar and do all of these things just to be a little bit healthier. But what does it actually take? Like, what is your, I mean, you might not be able to go into like extreme details, but essentially, what does your routine look like? What does your diet look like? Is there anything that you're cutting out? How much water do you drink?
Thing is, I never want to downplay the work that we do, especially from a pro perspective, right? And respect to the guys that are amateurs that are still trying to climb up the ranks, I know that it also takes equally a month to work, right? But I promise you, when you get to the pro level, the dynamic is very different. Take you through a brief synopsis of my day. I'd wake up in the morning, have my first meal at 5 o'clock in the morning, okay? And then I go to work, I train a few clients, and then I see my first coach, because I train twice a day when I'm on prep. So I see my strength and conditioning coach in the morning around 10, office 10. And then I obviously continue with my meals. I have a bit of a nap because sleep is very important. I mean, a lot of guys see these t-shirts that are written eat, sleep, train, and they don't actually understand how that's actually a bodybuilder's life, right? I have a nap, and then I see my second coach, who's my head coach, actually, Jack, for my second strength training session. And I go home, and I have an ice bath. In this winter, I have an ice bath, right? Because I need to make sure that my recovery is on point, so I can actually come back the next day and have, you know, a good training session that I'm still not feeling as sore from the last session, you know what I mean? So we try and speed up the recovery process. So I have my ice bath, have my last meal, and I'm in bed, right? So when I'm on prep, I actually don't even have a social life. You'll not see me out. I'm not out with friends because I'm indoors. I have to have my meals. You know, on the days that I do have in terms of time, I might not have the energy to do it. And when I say energy, I mean respectfully. It's not because I don't have energy for my friends, but because of how my diet fluctuates, I have something called a low carb day where the most carbs that I have is about 39 grams of carbs a day. Now, with a body like mine working on 39 grams of carbs, I literally have no energy. You know what I mean? So it gets a bit tricky, right? So that's basically a very brief synopsis of my day. You know, 7 meals a day, training twice a day, you know, and, you know, you're doing a sauna in the morning, heat therapy in the morning, you're doing an ice bath, cold therapy at night. That's it, you know?
So basically what you're saying is whatever you're doing, Retendo and other people listening, you're not doing enough. Because it's hectic. Because it's hectic. To be honest, like, I gym at minimum twice a week, and then like four times a week is like, sure, like that's a like, and once a day. It's not like a twice a day thing. And never mind the carbs and the it's like a balance. I'm just like, if I ate like pizza, then I will gym, and then I like balance. it makes sense in my mind, like calories in, exercise, calories out.
You got the fundamental science of it.
I'm trying. And so this is the other thing that I wanted to ask is, like, so you are also a coach and a personal trainer yourself. What are, like, what would your quick tips be for someone who's like, I want to bulk up, because you're a bodybuilder, so that's the main focus. I want to gain some muscle somewhere in my body.
Yeah.
Like, what would your top, like, tips be for someone?
Look, I'll have one tip, and this one tip even comes with an analogy, and I've said this so many times. You got to eat. It sounds so overrated, but it's got to be of the dieting. If you're trying to bulk up, you got to eat, right? So as I said, I eat seven times a day. I actually eat according to time, not according to hunger. But that's me right now trying to bulk. When I'm on prep, obviously it's a bit of a different situation. But when you're bulking, so this is the analogy of what someone who's genuinely purposely trying to bulk and someone who thinks they're trying to bulk, okay? If we took a car here, and we drove to Durban, right? So we're going to put full tank because that's what people do, right? Put a full tank of petrol and then you start driving, okay? Now, a normal person will probably hit a pit stop around Harry Smith or Ladysmith because they need to take a bit of a walk and they need to maybe check the car, which is the responsible thing to do. And then maybe they'll fill up their tank one more time and then head to Durban, right? For some people, they obviously, depending on your car, you will just, you know, have a bit of a walk and you know that your full tank will carry from Joburg to Durban, right? Now, that's someone who's just eating because they're eating. Now, what a bodybuilder does is this. We put full tank in Joburg. We'll drive, and when the gauge goes off the full tank, we'll find the closest garage and put it back on full tank. We'll drive again. When the gauge gets off the full tank, we'll get into another garage and put petrol. So which means in the trip between Joburg to Durban, we would have hit the garage maybe five times because the constant idea is to always keep driving on full tank. So that's what happens when you're trying to bulk, right? You're eating according to time, not according to hunger, because you want to get, as you said, very correctly, because that is the science. You're trying to get more calories in, then you're trying to get calories going out. So the whole idea is that you always full or saturated, right? So you don't want to be in a situation. Basically, I always tell people this. Anyone who comes up to me is like, dude, I'm trying to bulk, whatever the case may be. This is my first thing that I tell them. If you're still eating according to hunger, you're doing it wrong.
And what is the state of the bodybuilding industry or bodybuilding in South Africa? What does that look like?
Look, it's growing. I'll tell you that. It's growing because when I turned pro, I was the first black guy to do it. And I was also the youngest guy to do it. At the time, I was 26, 27. And I think, I stand corrected, but I think I was the 11th pro ever to be in South Africa, right? In the history of South Africa, right? In my federation. Which is very alarming considering the 60 million of us, right? South Africa is a wealth of talent. We have phenomenal, I can't even begin to tell you how phenomenal the athletes are. You know, it's just that obviously in South Africa, either two things kill the guys from continuing. It's either resources, right? And I say resources in terms of, you know, flying out the country, competing on international level. So finances mostly, right? Or it's just the patience of keep going on, you know, like the idea of keep on keeping on, right? A lot of guys get despondence, you know, they'll hit a very good year of competing and they expect the results to happen almost immediately, but it doesn't happen. Then the next year, they're kind of relaxed about it. They're not really, you know, trying to continue doing it. So, you know, you find guys that had good careers, but they were only like 2 years. You're like, my guy, like, if you just kept on going on just the two more years or, you know, three more years, this could have happened for you. But That's what's killing, I personally think, is killing the industry. It's that perseverance or that thing of, I hit a wall here, but I'm still going to continue. I hit a wall here, but I'm still going to continue. But in terms of the South African landscape, man, we have phenomenal talents here, and both male and female, you know, phenomenal talents. So it's a growing industry, which is great, you know, so we are getting there. The international industry is knowing that South African guys are here and we are causing a bit of a noise.
Another thing I actually want to ask, because it often comes up when it comes to bodybuilding, so around men than women, which is taking steroids. What is explain the steroids and bodybuilding. Is it something that, you know, the pro athletes take? Is it something that is part of the industry? What is that conversation?
Look, there's no denying that there's a very symbiotic relationship between the two. And anyone who wants to deny that is trying to be politically correct. Okay? As to who's taking, who's not taking, that's obviously confidential information, right? However, though, there's also a very evident, output on the fact that the more the technology of, you know, the steroid perpetuated, the more you started seeing physiques start changing on stage, right? Whereas, you know, back in the day, you'll see a guy who's about 75 kgs going and becoming, you know, being on a Mr. Olympia stage. Now you get guys where we call the freaks, where a guy is 112 kgs, 120 kgs, you know, to 130 kgs sometimes, right? So there's no denying that this is a very symbiotic relationship between the two, okay? Now, what I always gauge people in understanding is simply this. As much as it's evidence, it's there, it happens, and some people are taking it, some people are not taking it, whatever the case may be, whatever your personal choices are. The one thing that we cannot ever dispute is that they probably count if you are taking it, because I've done the research on them. Okay, my coach has done the extensive research on it. It's probably 5%. Okay, I'm telling you right now, even if there wasn't such a thing as steroids and they did not exist and it did not happen, I'm telling you right now, the guys that are at top of the game would still be at the top of the game, because that accounts for about 3 or 4% of the bigger picture. It's the dieting, it's the training, it's, you know, it's the other things that are much bigger than someone wanting to reduce a sport to steroids. Because if that was the case, then trust me, with the amount of people that I've bumped into and spoken to that have taken the stuff, you would probably have met, and I mean this respectfully, without sounding very cocky or arrogant, you probably would have met 50 smoos walking around. But the mere fact that you know one smoo shows you that it's not that has made the sport, or we can reduce a sport to the fact that it's because of this, therefore that, right? It is never that, you know, because it's not just that has cultivated the sport to being what it is today.
On a kind of lighter note, just out of interest, right? Because you're a bodybuilder, obviously. Yep. You are like, I don't know, 95% muscle. What is your fat muscle ratio?
So at the moment, and I mean, I'm going to say this and a lot of people might kill me for this, but I'm fat at the moment, right? But my fat and someone else's fat is very different, right? So I'm currently at about 9% body fat. When I get on stage, I'm about 3.5 to about 4% body fat. That's obviously measured against a caliper reading, because to date, yes, there is machinery that can test your body fat, but they're also not as accurate as the old school caliper readings, right? So we rely a lot on the caliper reading. So the highest one I've ever been was actually 97% lean muscle mass. And the lowest I've ever been was, you're actually right, 95%.
I did my research. So speaking of the mind and the power of the mind, there is so much that you've actually said that I think kind of mirrors almost every industry to a certain extent. You know, like there was something that you mentioned earlier where you said, you know, you've got to keep going, whether or not you've been doing it for 2 years and you kind of are just like, this is not it, or you know, you kind of want to let go. I do find that that almost kind of relates to almost every industry or one's passion or something that one person is driving towards, because you do hit like the starting block where you're like, you're running and you're in it and you're super excited and you're like, every day I'm going to show up, I'm going to write a chapter of this book, I'm going to, you know, exercise in the gym, I'm going to podcast. And then like one day you're just like, I've been doing this for such a long time and I keep hitting brick wall after brick wall after brick wall, and I'm kind of just not pushing through or not getting kind of, you know, where I want to go to. Have you ever had a moment like that in your career? And if you have, like, how did you overcome and how did you push through that?
Absolutely. Yo, I can't tell you how many times I've sat back in my career and I was like, you know what, I'm done. I'm good. This is not it, you know? And the thing is about bodybuilding, and Kai Green is a very huge advocate of this, right? What you see on my physicality is a manifestation of what I've been living in my head. So by the time you see my physique, it's what my brain has been thinking about for the longest time. Bodybuilding is a mental sport first before it becomes physical, you know, because my strength and conditioning coach even says this. It's actually written on his wall at the gym. He says that strength is a character before it's a physical trait, right? So it's there are moments where you sit back and you go, you know what, this is getting a lot. I can't keep going on. And it's that moment where you have to sit back and reconcile yourself into understanding why you did, right? Why you got up every other day and decided to do this, right? Because the love for something is not going to sustain you, right? It takes more than just loving something to want to go back to it, right? And this could be true and said for almost anything, any profession, even relationships, right? It's, you get to a point where you're like, me loving this thing is not enough, but it's about reconciling yourself with the ideology of, why did I even start this in the first place? And going back to the initial basis of, I started this because, and then you go back and you realize that you need to keep going because of that because, right? And more so than anything else, what I've realized, especially in my sports, I don't know about the other, you know, sporting codes or other careers, you got to find a reason to do this that's bigger than you. Because once you realize that it's bigger than you, it's easier to also realize that it's not easy to just give up and just walk away, right? Because not because you're doing it for the next person or you're doing it for that particular reason, but now you realize that you're more accountable to more than just yourself, right? And for me, it's been small snippets in my journey that has made me realize that if I can inspire one person to not just do bodybuilding per se, but to just change their life, for me, that's reason enough for me to sit back and go, let me not give up on this, because it's now bigger than Smoo getting abs, right? It's now bigger than, you know, I'll tell you a quick story, very quick story. I was competing in Eastern Cape in a small city called Umtata, and I'm busy competing and I see this guy backstage. He wasn't a competitor. He was just a random guy just sitting there. And I kept asking the guys, I'm like, guys, is this guy with anyone here? Like, you know, he's just chilling there. Not that he was causing any trouble, but it was just a bit weird because backstage is normally, you know, secured for athletes. Anyway, I get on stage, I win my division, I get off stage. And as I get off stage, this very guy stops me. He's like, hey, bro, don't mean to be rude or anything, but I just want to say that you really inspire me. So in my head, I'm like, oh man, I've had this story so many times, and I'm not trying to be cocky, but you know, you hear it so many times, the guys are like, I'm really inspired. But this particular story touched me because of this reason. The guy goes, you don't know who I am, and I'm so-and-so. I asked for a day pass today just to come and see you on stage because I knew that you were coming in town and I heard that you were coming in town and I just wanted to see you on stage. So I look at this guy and I'm like, ask for a day pass. What do you mean? So he goes, I've been following your journey for the last 6 months. And about 3 months ago, I decided to take myself to rehab just to clean up my life. So I'm like, sorry, what? He's like, yeah, no, I've been looking at your life and I really am inspired by what you do. And you've inspired something in me to just want to change my life. And I was addicted on drugs and I took myself to rehab and I've been there for the last 3 months. And today I asked for a day pass just to get out so I can see you on stage. I swear I stood there in disbelief. And all I could do at that time was just, I took off my medal. I signed my medal. I signed my trophy and I gave it to him and I walked away. And I just sobbed backstage because while the journey for me is beautiful and what it's taught me on a mental perspective, I never would have thought, ever would have thought that someone could look at me doing what I do, getting on stage and look at their life and go, I want to change my whole life because I saw you doing what you're doing with yours. So for me, that just, it blew my mind, you know, and till today, I can't get my head around that how can someone look at a bodybuilder and think, because when he said this to me, it didn't even sound like he was saying, I wanted to get off drugs to be a bodybuilder. It was not even about that. It was not even about him trying to train. It was literally a matter of, I saw you doing what you're doing. I got inspired and I just want to change my life.
That's really, really, really powerful. But again, there are incredible parallels about, I mean, I think sport in general, that, you know, kind of parallel a lot of, you know, life in general. So it's kind of like, it's almost like that. But I think because everyone has at some point in their life done sport or been to gym or tried to do something. And it's almost that like, I just think of like every time I'm at the gym and it's always like, oh, just one more rep or like five more minutes or like whatever it is. And it's you honestly, you think like, I actually can't do it. Like I can't do five more minutes. I can't do one more rep. And you get to that point where you kind of like actually override your mind and you actually do like seven more reps instead of five more reps. And you're like, oh my gosh, like I've done it. And it's like almost if you can do that. So I completely get this where this guy's coming from, because it's almost like if you can get your mind into that space, even in a work environment where you're like one more report, you know, one more client call, one more pitch, one more proposal, and then I'll hang it up. But it's just like, it's exhausting. It's really, really exhausting. Mm. And it sometimes takes out a lot more of you than you think of. But then like the next day you're like, oh, but I did it. But now I know that I can do, you know, I can do seven of, you know, X, whatever it is that I'm trying to do. So I think that's quite fascinating. What do you tell yourself when you think that you're getting to a place where you're like, okay, cool, I can't do one more bench press. So I can't do one more.
Look, so the irony, this is probably going to throw you off completely, is that my coach and I call this going into a dark place, right? Because so in this industry, or rather, let me say this, in any industry and in any professional, I can imagine the backlash one might have, right? Siya Kolisi led us to the World Cup. We got the World Cup. I can imagine him still getting backlash from people, you know, not liking him or saying certain things they shouldn't be saying, whatever the case may be, right? As with my sport, I have people that really admire me and really like me, and I have people that don't like me, right? So, and I've heard a lot of things about me getting flown around in terms of rumors in the industry. I find it very fascinating. And I think what also frustrates a lot of people in the industry is that as much as, you know, the Kid Prodigy name has blown up, I keep my circle very small and I keep to myself heavy, 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 heavy. So most of the time you're always assuming stuff, or you know as much as I want you to know, right? Because it's something my uncle once said, which was very powerful for me. He said, it's none of your business what people think about, but it is your business what you give them to think about, right? So that's where it is. So anyway, cut a long story short. I've then been able to summarize and take in all the negative, bad things that have been said about me, the bad energy, and I store it in a very dark place. And we call that the dark place with my coach, because when I'm training and I need to tap into that one more rep, I think about all the negative stuff that I've said, all the critique that have been said about me, the stuff that has been said and left behind my name to either denigrate me or speak ill of me, whatever. And I use that as fuel. And I used to think it's a bad thing up until I started reading up on, very successful people, how they also took that kind of stuff and made it work for them. I'll give you an example. Oprah. Oprah was said that she'll never, become a TV talk host. She was the most successful in our century, right? So she used that and cultivated that as fuel, right? Walt Disney was told that he'll never be a cartoonist. He built Walt Disney, right? Lionel Messi was said he's too short to be a soccer player. He's arguably the second, or if not the first, the best soccer player in the world. So it's all about taking that negative energy, putting it for me in a very small, dark room. And every time I feel like I want to give up, I tap into those words where someone said, I look horrible, or I have a small back, or I have small legs, or whatever. And I just give them two more reps just to satisfy that dark room, or to drown out those voices that said those things. So it's quite weird, because a lot of people think when I'm training, I'm thinking about unicorns and rainbows and, and how amazing I am or whatever, but it's not. It's about all of that all negativity, you take that and use it as fuel.
Tell me, how would you summarize your 20s?
How would I summarize my 20s? Risk. If there's one word I'll summarize my 20s, is a risk. What a lot of people don't know is that when I was in Durban and I was making the decision to move to Joburg and pursue my bodybuilding career, I had 152 rand in my bank account and a full tank of petrol. That's all I had. And I drove to Joburg, didn't have a place to stay. I was like, you know what? I'll wing it when I get there. I slept in my car for about a month and a half until I figure it out. At one point, I used to diet on bread. I'd literally have bread every day because that's all I could afford. I stopped being able to afford that. I started only dieting on supplements. I luckily had a supplement sponsor. So I'll space out my supplement shakes throughout the day. And yeah, and then things got better. And I started working harder. And I worked in my personal training business. And, and that's what I did.
And then, so tell me, have you experienced the quarter life crisis within your 20s journey? If you can think back on, some of the toughest times, I guess, that you've had. If you have, what has your quarter life crisis been and how did you get out of it?
I wouldn't say I had a quarter life crisis, but one thing that has happened is maybe questioning, right? So you question a lot of things. And it's okay to question, but as I said, you always also need to reconcile yourself with that understanding of why I started what I started. So I questioned, did I make the right decision by doing bodybuilding? Should I have not just continued, had a corporate job, or whatever the case may be? You question quite a lot of things in your 20s, or just being an adult and trying to figure out this life thing, right? And that can be very crippling to a certain extent, right? And it can give you unnecessary anxiety, and especially when you look at your peers maybe, and you're like, oh man, if I'd also maybe went that direction, maybe that's where I'd be, or whatever the case may be. But you then, as I said, you sit back and I'm in a position right now where I know for a fact that I wouldn't trade anything in the world to do what I do, because I absolutely love training. I love bodybuilding. Saying I'm passionate about bodybuilding makes it sound very blasé and cliché. But this is also cliché what I'm going to say, but I feel like I was born to do this, right? As I said, it sounds very, you know, just left hanging said there, but because that's what people say. But every time I'm at the gym, every time I'm doing what I'm doing, it's even spiritual for me. It feels like I'm getting closer to God, you know? So it's much deeper than just going on stage and showing off muscles. Or for me, it's much deeper than just picking up a dumbbell and pushing weights. It's my refuge. It's my safe haven. It's my comfort. It's where I found who I am, right? And I've never looked back since. Being an IFBB pro is what I do, is not who I am. You know what I mean? And a lot of people I've seen, you know, they embody their work and it becomes a personality trait. Strip me of my title and I know exactly who I am, you know? And what I do and who I am are two different things. However, I've learned a lot because of what I do. And I've built personalities and characteristics and traits because of what I do, but I'm not what I do. I know who I am outside of those things.
Sure. Okay. So hands down, my favorite quote of this entire interview is strip me of my title and I'll still know who I am. I think that's really, really powerful, because a lot of people, that is the one question that we in our 20s or one in their 20s is consistently asking. It's kind of like, who am I? What is my purpose in the world? Where do I fit in? And we start to identify ourselves by what we do. I mean, even in conversations.
Yeah.
Yes, we're on the, you know, other side of or kind of like the latter side of 20s. But a lot of your early and mid 20s is spent identifying yourself by what you do and not who you are. Mm. So it's, I am this, yeah. I do this. That's the entrance to the conversation. And the whole debate is kind of like finding like what is underneath that. Even talking about like things like how things make you feel, emotions, like all of that stuff that is actually like essential to you and making you as an individual is a lot of the stuff that we kind of brush over. And I guess as you get to the other side or the latter 20s, you're kind of just like, oh, my career just pays my bills. It just does the thing. It's not a defining.
Yeah.
Mind moments 101. All right. So final question is, what advice do you have for people in their 20s? What advice would you have for people in their 20s based on your journey and your life and what you've seen and what you've done and who you are and even the confidence that you have within yourself? What advice would you have for people in their 20s?
Take the risk. Take the leap of faith. That one thing that you're scared of doing because you feel like you might be making a mistake, do just that. 20s are also a very beautiful time to make mistakes, because you can still rebuild, you can still get better, you know. It's a beautiful place in taking that risk, because you never know. You know, most of the guys I've hang around with they've become successful in their respective careers out of just taking a risk. They took a risk. In fact, one of my clients is a very phenomenal designer. When I asked him, like, dude, what got you into designing? He's like, no, dude, I took a risk. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, dude, did you study this? Whatever. He's like, nope. Like, I genuinely woke up one morning and I was like, I foresee myself wearing this and I can see my friends wearing the same thing. So he took a risk. And he's arguably, or maybe not even arguably, one of the best designers this country has, right? And all because he just woke up one morning and was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. He literally even told me the story. He's like, dude, he sat down his parents and was like, listen, I don't know what I'm about to do, you know, in terms of, you know, how this is going to plan out. I know that I want to do designing and, you know, designing clothes. And I just hope it's going to work out for the best and let's go. And that's what he did. Take the risk. Take the risk and do exactly that thing that sets your soul on fire, that makes you feel like you can't sleep at night. And you feel like you want to do it, but you're scared of who's going to say this. or how it's going to look like to the next person, do it. You know, I always tell people, I don't suffer from what will people say syndrome. I don't suffer from that. You know, because one thing my mentor says, so one of my mentors is Vusi Tembiwai. One thing he always says is that he calls me boy, you know, because he always says I'm his little brother. He'll say, boy, listen to me, boy. You know this life thing that we live? It's not a dress rehearsal. This is it. This is it. So take the risk, you know. You know, pushing it back. I'm going to do it that time. I'm going to do it that time. This is it. This is the whole life that we have. It's not a dress rehearsal. No one is going to go on the other side and go, and cut. Let's take it from the top. This is it.
Many thanks to our guest for an amazing discussion today. And thank you all so much for tuning into the In My 20s podcast. Please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. And while you're here, leave us a comment and let us know what you thought about today's discussion. The In My 20s podcast is a production of Teensway Media. For more information, visit www.teensweymedia.com.